Hello and welcome to another episode of Trad Tasman Talk. The date is Friday, the 24th of July. I'm Tim Wilms, editor-in-chief of The Unshackled. We're into week three of the second lockdown here in Melbourne and day two of mandatory face coverings. Not mandatory masks, but mandatory face coverings. So we've got this new state of emergency we've got here, the stage three lockdown is due to expire August 16th, but we're not holding our breath or holding it in under the mask to think it'll end by then.
And good evening, everyone. It is 8 p.m. here in Auckland, and I am Diwa de Boer, editor of Right Minds NZ, and I suppose candidate for the new Conservative Party at the moment, and also my writings appear on the BFD. And hello to anyone coming from various sources. It's good to have you here tonight, and we will indeed be talking about Melbourne's mandatory veils, but also, and perhaps first, the resignations that we have seen from the New Zealand Parliament this week. We've been covering a resignation just about every week or every other week on this show, and in this run-up, as we get closer and closer to the election, the number of resignations is increasing. We've got two due to sex scandals and one sort of quiet resignation of somebody slowly walking away from their problems. And I suppose we can start with the obvious one this week, which has been Andrew Falloon, the National Party MP.
Falloon or philanderer?
Yeah, exactly. And the name will not ring a bell for anyone in New Zealand, or at least wouldn't have before the beginning of the week, because he was a completely unknown MP. He hadn't done anything. He'd been there for 3 years. Was one of these back quiet, collecting their paycheck on the back benches of the opposition in this case. And it started off a little bit slow that he had sent pornographic images to a schoolgirl, which turned out later to be a university student aged 19. And then he was fired by Judith Collins, who's just taken over as leader of the National Party since last week. So first week on the job. The leak was supposedly sent through to Jacinda Ardern's office. So this woman or her mother had sent the complaint through to the Prime Minister instead of, the actual party leader responsible. This had then been dropped through on a Friday evening, and sort of to try and
last Friday evening after off air.
Exactly. And then it wasn't really public until Monday, or it wasn't really discussed too much, I think, until Monday, or might have just been the fact that I wasn't paying attention over the weekend, which I normally try not to do. But it was basically he was gone on Monday, and that was the end of that, or so they thought. Since then, various other women have come forward. He's on to the fifth one now. So this was one of his habits, one of his favorite pastimes, apparently sending inappropriate pictures to women. And these women have been asked by Judith Collins to refer allegations to the police, and he's been removed from the National Party. Obviously, this being a deliberate targeting of one of her MPs, she struck back. And so we had a very quick follow-up with early this week, Ian Lee Scalloway, the Labour Minister for Workplace Relations, Immigration, and ACC.
What's ACC?
So ACC is Accident Compensation Corporation. I believe it's the final C. But it's basically if you have a workplace accident, if you have a car accident, or whatever, you get paid out. So it's kind of like compulsory insurance injury compensation scheme. Immigration is obvious, and we're actually going to get back to immigration at the end of the show, I think. Obviously, the thing that attracted the most interest in this scandal is the fact that he's the Minister for Workplace Relations, and this is a job he took a little bit too literally, and he had been committing adultery with one of his staffers for at least a year. And this was supposedly well-known
Does New Zealand have as it's called over here in our federal parliament, that Malcolm Turnbull implemented a bonking ban between MPs and staffers?
And there is, and I've just been correct around ACC in the chat. It's technically the no fault accident insurance, which was sort of what I said. But
the reason why I laughed at it is because she's obviously had, it was a consensual relationship, but you could claim it's a workplace accident.
Yeah, workplace accident. They're basically what I found out by this, which probably shouldn't have surprised me, but apparently this is the bonking is something that is standard procedure for MPs, and the number of MPs who don't go around bonking either other MPs or media or staff are a small minority. The fact that I read someone's take on this who said, some MPs are very good, and then listed about three or four names, makes me think that there aren't a huge number of them. There is apparently the unwritten rule of Parliament is that people can engage in whatever inappropriate sexual activity that they desire inside Parliament, and nobody is supposed to talk about it. But basically,
the parliamentary press gallery protection racket, we call it.
That is exactly what it is here, and apparently the parliamentary press gallery gets in on a lot of this as well, so the more you know, the less you want to know, but that's sadly the way it is. And there are a lot of people who are saying, we elect them to go and do a job.
They've got plenty of time for this.
If their wives can't trust them, why should you? And the fact that they're saying, this is none of their business, and so on. And this is actually the response that Jacinda Ardern gave. She was asked by one of the media if she knew about any other ministerial affairs. She responded, and I quote, the quote here is not quite correct, but she said she was not going to get drawn into rumors or speculation. And here's the quote: "This is not why we elect. This is not why people elect us into parliament." That was a direct quote from the Prime Minister. So,
right on that regard.
Yeah, exactly. All kinds of rumors have been flying around now more openly about just about every MP and. The sort of the unwritten rule, we may very well end up with a bonking ban, which as a bit of a Puritan myself, I'm not exactly opposed to. I think it's quite good if we're starting to dig up these things the MPs are doing and kicking them out of Parliament, even if it's done in essentially out of spite, as a kind of a war between...
Well, that's how our bonking ban came into effect, because...
So they are like, you outed one of ours, we're going to out one of yours.
With ours, there was a splinter between the federal coalition, the Liberals led by Malcolm Turnbull at the time, and the Nationals, which were led up until that point to Barnaby Joyce, who obviously had an affair and impregnated his media advisor, Vicky Campion. They've now had their second child now, but they were protected for quite a while until Shari Markson of the Daily Telegraph, she broke the protection racket and published the story on the front of the Daily Telegraph, and one of their snapperazzi got a photo of a pregnant Vicky Campion on the street.
Yeah, so that is something that we could see here in New Zealand now. Who knows? Whether or basically some have compared it to Jacinda taking one of Judith's rooks and then Judith taking one of Jacinda's knights, because he was an actual minister, Lise Galloway, and Falloon on the other hand was simply a nobody. The third resignation, on the other hand, I've got one more bit of info here. There were questions initially around this affair here, saying were any taxpayers funds involved? And this was asked initially on the very day, and on the very day it came out. And so a lot of people wondered, why would you ask that question? If why was why would it be a question of public funds being spent? It turns out that he flew her to Paris in January.
Oh, immigration minister as well.
As well, yes. And he was there on official business in Paris. And but the evidence suggests that he paid for it himself. So there you go. He's not entirely untrustworthy after all. Apparently he will not spend taxpayer money on his mistresses so far. So there is a silver lining to this particularly disturbing situation. And yeah, that will basically seems to be done now. He's gone. They're both gone in this case. And whether or not we're going to have more of this next week, we'll find out. It is still just over seven weeks to the election. The third resignation is actually a follow-up to the one we had last week or the week before, if I quickly check my notes here. It would have been 2 weeks ago now, that we saw the National Party had their Chinese spy trainer resign from Parliament with little fanfare.
Oh,
and
noted
as well. And I noted as well, the Labour Party still had one, Raymond Huo, who is actually chairs the Justice Committee and the Electoral Integrity Committee. He similarly has connections to the CCP, and he also just announced this week very quietly that he will not be standing for Parliament, and he's gone too. So the two obvious ones who at least were compromised with CCP influence are gone, but it's very, very likely that the mode of business has not changed. It's just that they will be a little bit more careful about how they get what they want. And that is that's all of the not quite gossip, but all of the facts around the three resignations that we have had this week. So we're going one every other day at the moment.
Being in lockdown Melbourne, hearing about these salacious sex scandals, it reminds me of those were the days in politics where the most dramatic thing was a sex scandal. That's how bizarre things are in Melbourne at the moment. And just commenting on those two sex scandals, you had a serial sexter, Anthony Weiner style
basically sexter. Yeah. Although it was apparently not pictures of himself, although I don't know if the full details will come up, but apparently he was sending pictures of women to other women.
we laugh. But apart from the immorality of it, and obviously being a Christian, you believe that adultery is a sin. I'm not sure what your Christian views are on workplace fraternization.
Well, in this case, that's what it was. Including in general. Yeah, absolutely. The same views. Any sexual activity outside of marriage is something I would condemn.
But apart from that, it's how do these politicians, they're supposed to be working for the public and they've got all this time to have all these sex and send all these
and that's
sex.
And that's the thing. People say, oh, well, they spend all of this time in Wellington. They spend all of this time there and so on. Yeah, well, clearly they are spending time there, but they're not getting much done.
And now, as always, we are broadcasting live on both the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel. A reminder that the Unshackled's YouTube channel is monetized, which means in the live chat you can directly send through a super chat by pressing the dollar sign and writing your message and choosing your dollar amount, and we'll read it on the show. Even the more sort of out there, more obscene ones we'll read out.
Sometimes censored, and nothing like a super chat to derail our conversation. That's usually the way they go. And thank you very much for those of you who support the show and everyone who's watching the show. Leave a like and make sure to say hello in the chat. I see a few of you making a little bit of noise, and especially in my chat anyway, commenting on the untrustworthiness and unscrupulousness of our politicians, which at this point is not really something that surprises anybody. And perhaps if you look back through history, often never has. But I read a comment from a retired MP who was sort of one of Parliament's more respected ones, who basically said, you used to have to be somebody that was respected in your community before you could get elected to Parliament. And that is something that's changed. You can be an absolute nobody with basically no respect. And if you've got the right party name behind you, or you're on the right list, on the right place, on the right list, and and they get.
Well, that sums up our Victorian Premier, Daniel Andrews, never had a real job, started as a Labour staffer, and look where we are at the moment. Unfortunately, the scandals and stuff-ups in Victoria are now deadly and life-destroying, given that, well, we've had 34 people die in this second wave. Most of them have been in their 70s, 80s, and 90s, which obviously, with a flu-like virus, it's going to kill the old and the vulnerable. But the reason why there's... because there was only 22 deaths in the first wave, there's 34 this time, which is, so it's clearly eclipsed and it'll just get worse. It's because it's infected the aged care facilities now. And that's because a lot of staff have acquired it in the community, brought it into the workplace, and obviously haven't got the proper PPE, which is, and there's been a lot of health workers as well who've tested positive. A lot of them caught it out in the community. I've even heard of doctors who've tested positive and still seen patients. So Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews, he's been eager to point the blame at ordinary Victorians for being complacent, threatening us with fines and a tougher lockdown. I've spoken about before the hotel quarantine failures with the private security that judicial inquiry has finally started, and hopefully if we see all the details there. But from what I'm seeing here with especially with the outbreaks in aged care facilities, it seems to be that the professionals that we trust and should know better are the ones who've let us down, from the Premier to the Department of Health and Human Services, to health workers and in the aged care facilities.
Make sure you give them a good round of applause.
Yeah, clap for them. But apparently,
They don't pay any fines. They don't pay any fines for what they've done, right? You're the one who's going to be fined. You're the one who has to wear the mask, the face veil. You're the one who has to be welded into your house, and they continue to go about their business as normal.
Maddie Rose from XYZ calls it the mask of the beast.
I like that. I like the aspect. There's especially in traditional religious gatherings, or even these secret societies, the veiling or masks and so on have important functions that they serve for various reasons, and so the way that it's worked itself into this pandemic is quite fascinating.
Margot, my moderator, has also reminded me essential workers have essentially let us down, which that's where the virus is being transmitted, in essential workplaces. A lot of distribution centres, there's been outbreaks there. So on Wednesday, when we had the highest daily increase in new coronavirus cases, 484, Daniel Andrews slammed Victorians for not following the rules, and those not isolating when they tested positive or were waiting for a test result. Then it was discovered that the Department of Health and Human Services had instructed people that if they got tested and didn't feel symptoms, they didn't have to self-isolate. So he's lecturing Victorians even though it's his misinformation which has led to this. And the next day, on the Thursday, we had 403 cases. He was a bit better because he miraculously figured out that maybe people who are turning up to work while sick, they're not doing it because they're irresponsible, but because they feel that they they have to work because they're bake balance, they're casual workers, they haven't got any sick leave. So he's promised a $300 payment for those who've taken a test and have to isolate, and if it's a positive and you have to isolate for 2 weeks, a $1,500 payment, which is a much better incentive for people to come forward and to quarantine and isolate for 2 weeks. Because if the government's basically keeping you under complete house arrest for 2 weeks, the least they can do is compensate you for it, because this is on the government's orders. I know you and I, being free market libertarians when it comes to economics.
Don't call me a libertarian.
Economic matters.
That's okay. I'm fine with that. I'm definitely on the free market side. Yeah. No, don't worry. And that
we
that
normally oppose welfare.
If the government is going to destroy people, it should compensate them. It's not that it should be destroying them to begin with, but I'm definitely not opposed to them paying fair compensation to the people that they're harming. Although obviously there's a long term cost to that as well. But you've got a choice between bad or worse.
So it's not the people who are in private residences spreading the virus, because we do have the stay-at-home restrictions. It's not the people traveling to suburbs to exercise or spreading the virus, because apparently that's being a big scandal, because they interviewed a lady at the Royal Botanical Gardens in Melbourne called the Tan, and she was from Brighton, and she was asked why she was exercising at the Tan when she's from Brighton, and she's like, well, you get bored of walking the same areas. I've done all of Brighton. She was called a Karen, but she's more of a Prue, which if you're familiar with Kath and Kim, Prue and Trude, the effluent. Affluent, I should say. Effluent, they call it on Kath and Kim. Affluent, part-time society people who live in Kooyong. So she was more of that. I'm finding now that the label Karen is now being misappropriated, that any woman who you don't like is a Karen, which is, that's not how it works. but yes, this is it's basically picking on people for the little things like that, like traveling through suburbs too, and like when you're outdoors, that like exercising, like obviously it's easy to keep social distancing.
And they've been saying the whole time that social distancing, if you're 2 meters apart, that's fine.
Although it's 1.5 meters,
whatever they make it. You know, they pick a number, that's fine. You know, if the masks, again, if the masks work, then welding people into their houses isn't needed. But they're saying masks don't really work. Initially, for instance, in New Zealand, it was should we wear masks? It was always said no, there's no need to wear masks.
Yeah, and that's what Daniel Andrews said. There's no need to wear masks. Well, it was only until the past week, the advice was only wear a mask if you cannot socially distance. Now,
this is not about your health. There's no way that you could frame this to say, oh, this is good for your health, because it's the exact opposite to what they've been saying the whole time.
Yeah, and you have to wear a mask outside, and you can only take it off outside if you're doing strenuous exercise. So walking or walking the dog, you... by my reading of the face covering mandate, you still have to... wear a face covering, which if you're in a field alone and that or public field alone, this is the thing. And as I've just mentioned, most people are catching the virus indoors. So,
and that's what it comes down to. Again, initially, at the initial lockdowns, they, for instance, closing down schools, they said, it's not really necessary. And even now we see more and more states say, children don't really get coronavirus, they don't really spread it, it's not really a problem. But the reason it was done was, people need to believe it's serious. And so now that you're in lockdown phase two, it's like, okay, well, how do we up the ante? And it's basically what it is. It's a discussion. How do we up the ante? And okay, well, mandatory face masks. Yeah. It must be serious if you have to wear a face mask.
And I've already...
And that's the only reason.
Yeah, I think I've been through with you at least have on Wilms Front. During the first Victoria lockdown, they banned golf, fishing, recreational activities where it's easy to socially distance. Well, if you're fishing by yourself, because it was about sending a message that this is serious. But
about sending a message and about control at this point. You know,
you're allowed to fish, golf, horse ride, lawn bowls, surf, swim.
As long as you're wearing a mask while you do it, right?
Well, I'm not sure about surfing and swimming now. Well, obviously that's more strenuous exercise, I would say.
You need to have your goggles or snorkels, mandatory snorkels. Although
if you are doing strenuous exercise like jogging, you still have to have a mask with you, so that if you stop and start walking, you've got to put the mask on.
But you could also wear, you could have a, you know, special, sort of bandito, sort of Western style.
Yeah, this is the thing.
You could wear a burqa, you could wear the niqab, I suppose.
Health advice was that if you're going to wear a face covering, it, you know, should actually protect you, that bandanas and scarves are not effective. Though with this face covering mandate, a bandana, scarf, and coming out from Daniel Andrews' own mouth, he said even a hanky's acceptable.
Hanky will do, exactly. So sorted hankies. Yeah. You've got,
So you could just take a
lot. Balaclavas.
You could take the hanky off your, nose and face to blow the hanky, put it back on, and that's lawful. Because it just has to cover the nose and the mouth. Yeah. The fine for not wearing a face covering is $200, so it's not as obscene as the $1,652 fine. There are lawful exemptions, reasonable excuses, such if you have a medical condition, such obviously asthma or a skin condition, but this is the thing. The information, it was so vague throughout the week, and this was another thing. They now say that children under 12, they don't have to wear a face covering, where the previous medical advice said those under 18 don't need to wear a face covering. So they've even changed that. So if you're between 12 and 18 now, it's mandatory for you to wear a face covering.
No.
But 12 and 18 year olds, do they carry ID? Like, this is the thing. If you see, somebody who is, say, 14 not wearing a face covering, like, what are the police are supposed to, they're supposed to sort of, determine their age to see if whether they'll get a fine or not? Like, this is the thing.
You can't answer that question, and they're not going to either. That's the only thing there is to it. And I'm thinking back to when we had our initial lockdown. I remember we went out to the shops once, and I thought, okay, I'll do the mask. I'll try one of the little the surgical masks that I've got around the house for working. If I'm doing some sanding or other work, and had one. I thought, okay, I'll try it out. But it was a hot day, and I had it on, 10, 15 minutes, and that was it. And I took it off, and I was like, nah. it was simply almost suffocating to wear one, especially out on a hot day. And okay, yeah, sure, and we're a little bit more into in the middle of winter now, basically, where that's probably less of an issue. But it was a case of simply not doing it, simply walking with one on for 5 or 10 minutes. That was more than enough for me, and I thought, nah, this is simply not doable. And that was back when the recommendation was, you don't need one. So I thought, well, if the government says I don't need one, maybe I do. But I figured out pretty quickly that they are not at all practical.
Well, the previous health advice that if you're healthy people don't need to wear a mask, which that obviously it's gone from that advice to it being mandatory. Now, I've only found out this information today that if you do have a medical reason why you're exempt, so we're wondering whether you need to have a doctor's certificate or something, but no, you don't. You just have to explain to the police officer your lawful reason for not having a face covering. So it's not police are going to say, papers, please.
Oh, they'll they'll move on to that at some point, I'm sure. Your mandatory mask papers. We do have people who even now, and usually during the winter, especially if I take the train, I see, you know, there are some people who wear masks, for instance. That's usually because they're the ones who are sick, which is when it's appropriate. If you're the one who's sick,
based near Monash University, yeah, which obviously has a lot of international students. When I drove past there, a lot of the Asian students did wear masks during winter, just because this is where this virus came from.
There's a reason they wear masks.
That explains that phenomena there. But we certainly don't want this to be the new normal in Australia, because we don't give birth to such viruses like they do in those Asian countries, because don't forget SARS 2002, that was from Hong Kong. Hong Kong flu 68, Asian flu 58. Daniel Andrews has said we're going to be wearing masks for a long time, though he did also say that they'll only be mandatory while they'll be effective. So I guess we'll see in the next life cycle of the virus, 14 days, whether they make a difference. But out and about, I've been seeing, I would say 99.99% of everyone I've seen is masked.
Nobody wants to be the one that stands out.
Well, the attitude that I'm finding with a lot of Melburnians this second lockdown is they're just sort of sucking it up, being passive.
Yeah, they want to get over it, right? Okay, well, we just do what we're told. It's just another week, just another 2 weeks, and on it goes. And there are many places in the world now, like here in New Zealand, we don't have any problems and everything's back to normal. And it was very, very quickly. It was like that very, very quickly. But in many other places in the world, this has been dragging on since March, to March, February, not February in some places, but so March through April, on May, in June, in July, and now it'll be August, and then it's going to be September, and it's going to go on like, just one more week, two more weeks, one more month, and it goes on and on. Mm-hmm. And there's never a point at which they stop. And even this week, I've just got in front of me here a report from the Telegraph in the UK saying the lockdown may cost 200,000 lives by their latest government report. That initially was that they would lose 200.
Well, that could still be accurate, but might not be from coronavirus.
It is definitely not from corona. This is their non-coronavirus. This is the non-coronavirus fatalities. And they had initially estimated in April would be 25,000. They've now upped that to 200,000 that they would lose based on delays in treatment and various other mediums or long-term damages, especially cancer, cardio-related illnesses. You've seen in Melbourne where are the deaths coming from? They're coming from the retirement villages, which are obviously going to be hit very hard. And often in winter, they do get hit hard by diseases. It normally doesn't get tracked, right? There's normally no media attention. That's the thing. There's a big microscope on it.
Last year's killer flu season in Australia, which killed 900 Australians.
It's far more than the coronavirus has so far, right?
Yeah. Definitely. And I've
and
spoken
probably
about
will be more
how
than
I got the flu last winter, really bad flu. I was bedridden for a couple of weeks. So did Maddie and Dave from XYZ. So did Blair Cottrell and Neil Erickson. So it clearly spread rapidly around our circle. We don't know who patient zero was. But this is also the other thing as well, that the reason it's spreading so much, there's so much community transmission, is because Victoria's Department of Health and Human Services can't keep up with the contact tracing. And now they're basically saying that what's hindering our contact tracing is people are not picking up the phones. And so they are now bringing in more ADF now to basically door knock people if they don't answer the phone.
Next, you'll have your third lockdown as the contact tracer door knockers are the ones with coronavirus, spreading it from home to home as they knock on people's doors.
Oh, this was also my concern about the public housing tower lockdowns. Yeah. Like, you're actually entering more people into the towers to enforce it. But as far as I know, nobody died from the coronavirus in those public housing towers. Yeah. The lockdowns
and one of the
all
reasons again
there.
For that will be the fact that they're generally speaking younger people in those towers.
Yeah. So was it even necessary that hard lockdown if nobody died, which is we're trying to save lives? Was it reasonable to keep them under house? Eight of the towers were kept under total house arrest for less than a week. I think the final one was at least 2 weeks.
Yeah, and this is where how many weeks ago was this? Now I talked a little bit about the aspect, and this is when we were talking about the towers, the aspect of trying to, you know, the lives must be saved at all costs, but in the very same places that don't care about lives, the same places that have very liberal approaches to abortion and to euthanasia, and the only thing that they see is bad is if lives are lost outside of our control, and that must be mitigated at all costs, and only those that are lost outside of our control in a novel way. All right, it's the novel coronavirus that's the problem, because the regular flu season, you know, the killer flu season that you just mentioned 5 minutes ago, that's not a problem because that's normal. That happens every year, every 2 years. It's no big deal. It's because this is something that's new, it's something sensational, and it's something that we can talk about endlessly week after week.
Yeah, the other deaths, they don't seem to register. It's almost if, like, as long as we save a life from coronavirus, it doesn't matter about the other
anybody
deaths
who dies from anything else
that might be of a consequence. There's a loss of perspective, and that's also fueled by the mainstream media here in Australia, which is more out of control than ever at the moment. They're still campaigning for Melbourne to have a level 4 lockdown, which it hasn't been defined at all. And Daniel Andrews and the Chief Health Officer Brett Sutton, to their credit, have said that that's not necessary, even though the daily numbers are still high. They're stable. It's not. I'll show you the Victorian coronavirus curve. I'll just bring it up on the screen. So as you can see, that it looks like it's keep going up, but it's still like it's still in these sort of like 200 to 300, 400. There's not. This is the new daily cases here. So we're not going up to, you know, we got close to 500, but we haven't gone, you know, 600, 750, 1,000 here. And of course, the figures that you've got to look at are the hospitalizations and the ICU. And oops, sorry, that man comes
too
late.
Soon.
Yeah. this is the Australian Government Department of Health. Yeah. Despite all the, you know, announcing the daily case numbers and announcing the deaths, which are all tragic, only 41 people nationwide are in intensive care. 40 in Victoria, 1 in New South Wales, 211 admitted to hospital. Nationwide, 201 in Victoria. So certainly the health system is not overwhelmed at the moment. 7 News, they put out a fake news story at the end of last week saying that health professionals are at breaking point, working 12-hour shifts. This is one of their... it was in one of their news footage here. One of the people that was put on a ventilator there.
Oh wow!
Yeah. That looks like a dummy, don't you think?
Yes, that is most definitely a dummy.
And what was even more egregious was 7 years using the same footage. Was it from Italy or was it from New York or where was it? I don't even know where this actually is.
I can't remember where the... I remember looking into this when the original footage came out, and it's interesting you bring this up now. I thought, oh, for sure Tim will bring this up on the show, because Amy showed it to me 2 days ago, I think, or maybe even yesterday, and I didn't believe her at first. I was like, no, this is an old story. This is from March.
Mm.
And she's like, no, look at this. This is real. This is Melbourne, July, and they're still using the same stock footage that perhaps may not even have initially been taken with coronavirus cases. And it was definitely first used as a hospital in Italy. But I believe the original footage predates coronavirus, and it was just some stock footage that they had on file from New York.
Yeah, but there's no...
They first used it in Italy and then in New York, and now they've used it in Melbourne. Yeah. And they're just like, oh, yeah, grab me some stock footage of the hospital, please. Thanks. Yeah.
And the ordinary person watching that, they're not aware of the...
They're not paying... Yeah, that's right. And your normal average person is not paying attention, is not going to pick up on this footage, is not going to realize, hey, I've seen this footage 3 times before. They can keep recycling it, and 99% of the population will never know.
And one of the anti-lockdown pro-freedom activists that I've started following, I'll get to... the media campaigns against them later, Lance Simon, in response to that 7 News report, he went down to his local Frankston Hospital and he's like, wow, it's empty here. There's, you know, clearly it's not overwhelmed. And I noticed that because 7 News, they didn't just get caught out by those Facebook groups, that they got mentioned by Avi Yemeni and also by Andrew Bolt as well. So I noticed that I saw both 7 News and ABC News, they didn't show any fake footage of ICU, but they filmed the hospitals getting prepared for an influx of patients. And getting prepared for an influx is not the same as having them. So them getting the equipment
test run
out, and they interviewed this ICU nurse who gave a very stern a message to people who are not taking it seriously, saying my team in here are working around 16 hours to get all this ready and that. So sort of, you know, they've actually got real footage and like an actual nurse this time, because they, of course, they never admit it, but they know they got busted using fake footage.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, the hospitals, like you said, are still reasonably empty. Even post coronavirus here in New Zealand, where they were trying to catch up on the backlog of hospital. And I may have mentioned this on the show a few weeks ago, but I was in a hospital and I walked into one of the departments, one of the parts of the hospital, and there was nobody there. And I thought to myself, this is strange. Isn't there a big backlog to work through? Haven't they deferred so many people's treatments and so on? But it basically seemed like people still weren't showing up, or for whatever the reason, it wasn't the fact that they didn't have the capacity to handle people. It wasn't the fact that the hospitals were full. It was just the fact that there was nobody there. Yeah,
and that's what we were initially sold upon, that we need to get the curve flat, because back in March, because we still didn't know a lot about this virus, we need to flatten the curve so our health system wasn't overwhelmed. That was the deal for the first lockdown. And of course, we've seen mission creep since then. Mm-hmm. The media, they've also been getting a lot of the medical experts on to campaign for an elimination strategy,
which
instead of the current suppression approach of our national cabinet. They claim that Jacinda Ardern, she eliminated the coronavirus. Was that actually her official goal, or was it suppression?
Level 4 was elimination from the beginning. So we had 4 stages, second or third level was suppression, and the final stage was definitely elimination, and that was the goal very quickly. Although we were obviously initially inundated with the whole flatten the curve stuff, but definitely the it went straight to eradication.
Because with the elimination approach, and a lot of people on the media do rightly point out that you'd have to keep the borders closed forever.
That's exactly
the situation. I mean, New Zealand's
been
very, very lucky that you haven't had the quarantine breaches that we had in Melbourne. You've had a few runaway people, but it's been gotten on top of.
And we haven't had any more runaways since last week, and it's been reasonably quiet on that front now, and it looks like, you know, we for some reason have gotten very lucky with competent border control, and there seems to be absolutely no leaks there, other than the rumors that, you know, it's going to happen to stop, you know, they're going to put us back into lockdown just before the election, and they're going to cancel the election and so on. All of the conspiracy rumor mills on all of social media, and I'm sure that everybody in New Zealand will have come across it by now. But other than the fact that they're ready, they're prepared for it, there is no indication that that there can even be another outbreak in New Zealand with the way things are set up at the moment. It simply doesn't spread fast enough for a largely rural country like New Zealand with the small numbers of people that we're handling. And now that we're going to be charging people $3,000 for their quarantine stays, we're going to get even fewer people using it. So, yeah.
And this is the advantage that Australia and New Zealand have. And I think going forward with Australia, given that we have had, well, those public housing tower outbreaks, which are called vertical cruise ships, we've got the space, we can spread out more. Rural and regional Victoria, they haven't gone back into level 3 lockdown. They've still got pubs, restaurants, cafes, gyms, cinemas, open community sports taking place. They're still locked out of the rest of Australia, but they're not under house arrest. They can still have 5 visitors to their home, gather outside. compared to us here in Melbourne, that's... Like, you can still in rural and regional Victoria leave the house, no questions asked.
Yeah. Oh, wow, we must thank our overlords for this wonderful privilege.
that's sort of the small... and they don't have to wear face masks as well in rural and regional Victoria. They are advised to, though... Though it's interesting, just going back to the face coverings, in the question and answer things, there's ridiculous things like, do I have to wear a face covering when I'm at home? Like, this is the thing, like the media...
Now that's the next, you skip too far ahead, just rewind.
And if you're working in an enclosed office, obviously you don't need to wear a face mask because no one else is around. Obviously, if you're live broadcasting or like we are now, or teaching, when clear communication is needed, you don't need to wear a face mask. And this is why even on Thursday...
If you cut some holes in a brown paper bag and put it over your head, does it count?
As long as their face and nose are covered.
Good suggestion.
I haven't seen too many, because you actually can be creative when this face covering mandate. You can dress up as a old Wild West saloon bandit.
Oh, exactly.
It's perfectly legal.
That's the way that I would go.
Yeah. RV Yemeni, posted a picture of himself outside Coles in a clown mask saying, oh, well, I have to, you know, wear a face covering. So there's a lot
He should get his kippah and just like put some string on it and tape it in front of his face.
Though in banks you still have to remove face covering because of security. Yeah. Though, like, banks these days as like,
I wasn't going to ask about the banks, but
there's still plenty of high value retail outlets where you still have to wear a face covering into it.
It's that you can't be infected in a bank. The coronavirus cannot interfere with the exchange of money, and the banking system is immune to coronavirus, of course.
I mean, when was the last bank robbery you heard of? I mean, it would be more needed to remove face covering in service stations. That's where people normally rob. I remember it was years back. I wasn't even allowed into a survey with my hood on because it was a really cold night. I used the hood to keep myself warm. I wasn't allowed in unless I took off the hood. So there you go.
Oh.
But yes, this is the thing, and why I communicate with people on whether it be this show, Wilmsfront, make sure they do know their rights and the rules, that they're not just listening to the media misinformation, because it's not a mask mandate, it's a face covering mandate, yep. And there are exemptions.
Yeah, like, that's right.
You could always wear a broadcast and drive with a face mask on if you're driving solo.
It's the one that Amy and I would always laugh at when we were driving around, is people wearing their face masks.
What's going to happen? Who's going to be held responsible if somebody has a car accident because their mask slipped over their eyes or fogged their glasses?
Yeah, exactly.
And also, children under 12, they're not advised to wear face masks. But I have seen young children younger than 12.
Yeah, so obviously the parents, because they really want to comply, and so they just chucking the mask on their kids.
Dangerous for them.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's not. It's as long as you don't die of coronavirus, it's okay.
Yeah. And what if somebody who thinks that they need to wear it while jogging, doing strenuous exercise, because there were two people who died in China from asphyxiation from jogging with masks.
Too bad.
Mm.
At least they didn't die of coronavirus.
Or at least they didn't get a... At least they died without getting a $200 fine.
We shall see where this goes, and I'm sure there will be another wonder. I'm sure there will be another there'll be another development on this next week. Something will change. Mm. I can basically guarantee it. It'll be something different every week. They'll have to keep you entertained during the rest of this lockdown.
They've
got to change something every week, else it's not going to work.
Well, because the media asks every day, what about stage four? Every journalist asks a politician, what about stage four?
Next week on Trad Tasman Talk, we'll be discussing stage four of Melbourne's lockdown.
But of course, the media, they'll never be adversely impacted from any sort of lockdown, because the mainstream media, they're always essential. And I mentioned,
so many of them lose their jobs. It's a weird case where so many of them have been fired. In New Zealand as well, hundreds of media people have lost their jobs, and
eight Bauer media magazines closed down, including OK and New Weekly. Oh well, they were the original fake news magazines, so not a real great loss. But even Men's Health and Women's Health and Good Health, so. That's obviously not good. Health magazines closing, but when journalists are doing live cross outside in Melbourne, they're not required to wear a face covering during the live broadcast, even if it is outside. But I have noticed that some Melbourne journalists, filming, have worn the face covering, even though they don't have to if they're doing a live broadcast. So they're clearly just doing it there for the on-air aesthetics there.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the clip that everybody perhaps will have seen from America, where you had the journalist with his face mask on talking about how nobody is wearing a face mask. Nobody's wearing a face mask. And this guy comes on and points at it behind him. And says, your camera crew, none of them are wearing face masks.
Yeah. I don't know whether this live broadcasting exemption covers the camera man as well.
I'm sure it does.
Mm. Yeah. Of course, you never get to see behind the camera. Yeah. And you are allowed to take it off if you're eating and drinking. You don't have to.
Yeah. You cut a hole in it and put a straw and
lamp
up the food.
But the reason why, even though he does have that totalitarian socialist streak, Dan Andrews, reason why he's not going to stage four, because he knows that the state is going to run out of money soon, especially if he's got to keep handing out the $1,500 and $300 hardship payments, and I don't think that, they're going to get the revenue that's on paper with the fines.
No.
So we got a economic and budgetary reality check with Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg providing a fiscal and budget update yesterday. So our budget deficit for this financial year projected to be $85.8 billion. Next financial year will be $184.5 billion. They did announce a rollback in the JobKeeper scheme this week, which was far too generous and disincentivized people going back to work, and could have led to zombie businesses and jobs, which were just there on paper. They had no intention of coming back, so the payments being cut.
And the tax revenue for that is going to be on paper as well.
Yeah, payments being cut from $1,500 to $1,200 a fortnight for those employed full-time, and to $750 a fortnight for those who working 20 hours or less. The new job seeker remains at $810 per fortnight. This is what I was saying previously, that you can only shut down your economy completely once, and you can only ruin it once, because the budget figures they're now becoming grim reading for everyone, and that's if people don't have jobs, reasons to get up in the morning, that's that deteriorates our quality of life.
And there's no realistic way out of there until they perhaps actually do run out of money, but I suspect they will keep getting the unlimited debt funneled through to them so they can keep this up. And it's sort of a way where they don't really have to worry because they're not going to pay for it, and all their children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren
like
to worry
us
about it. And they don't, people like us. but even then, it's pushed forward. It's pushed back generations. So
I've been thinking, like, because there's been a lot of talk about, there have been illegal border crosses from Victoria. A few got busted in South Australia, fined and deported. So there's been still a lot of, I've talked about Victorians being the new Mexicans or, refugees to the north. But I've also been thinking about becoming a debt refugee to escape the debts that your governments have accumulated, just migrate to a country with no debt.
Who knows? That very well may happen, especially those who can afford to aren't going to pay it. It's essentially a form of slavery where the next generation is enslaved to pay for these silly mistakes that this one has made. Or in the case of the they say, we're saving lives. So, they're saving lives, and then the lives of future generations will have to pay for the selfishness of this one. And, you can only spend the money once. New Zealand actually had a similar the only budget update that we had this week was the Finance Minister Grant Robertson announcing that he was being very fiscally responsible and restrained, and he was putting aside $14 billion of the coronavirus fund that they had borrowed and printed for a rainy day. They're keeping that just in case. So $14 billion of debt that they were going to spend is now just going to
sit there for the next,
and that's very responsible.
It is. Next emergency.
Yeah, it's fine. And I could put that in a, you could have put it in a positive way to say, we're borrowing $14 billion less. But no, instead he said, we're putting aside $14
billion. Or if it's printed,
that
we're just going to burn it or evaporate it, recycle it, make it into paper. I mentioned refugees before. You've got a new refugee who's going to become a New Zealander.
It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to finish the show off with. We are just we're going to go a little bit over, guys, I think.
Yeah, we will.
This is a good topic and the next one too, and then we'll wrap up the show in hopefully 10 minutes. We've talked about, I apologize for mispronouncing his name, but Baruz Buchani, I suppose, is close enough.
Yeah, that's fine. You're not going to get called racist by our viewers.
The famous Kurdish Iranian refugee, and I suspect you could use that lightly in that he's probably he's a country shopper as far as I can
tell. Yeah, because he was in Australian detention. He was
tried to illegally he was an illegal immigrant to Australia, and now he has been he was trying to claim asylum in America, and that's basically why he was allowed into New Zealand, because he said, well, I'm not claiming asylum in New Zealand, I'm just I've been invited for whatever reason, you know. They obviously have been working on this behind the scenes. He's in New Zealand, and then now suddenly he has asylum in New Zealand. And let's think right back to the beginning of the show
when
Minister, the immigration minister who's just resigned, on the very same day that he resigned, Baruz Buchani gets his asylum application accepted.
There's a this stuff story, Golroy's Garamara.
Yeah, Golroy's Garamara. The Iranian. She's a similar. She's Iranian, and her parents were country shoppers as well.
Yeah, Greens, New Zealand MP. She's basically a combination of our annoying Greens senators. Now we've got. We'll have three of them now, because we've got Maureen Faruqi from New South Wales, mother of Osman Faruqi. Both mother and son are always complaining about how racist Australia is. Then, of course, we've got Sarah Hanson-Young in South Australia, needs no introduction. And then we've got Lydia Thorpe, the Aboriginal senator-elect from Victoria, replacing Richard Di Natale, who claims that her $200,000 salary in the Senate is reparations because she has transgenerational trauma.
It sounds like she may be Australian, which and I've seen been reminded here in the chat that they went to Indonesia as well. And I believe the same thing with Golroy's parents. They left Iran, they went to Indonesia. Same thing with Buchani, likely went to Indonesia, then tried to illegally enter Australia. In the case of Golroy's, her parents realized that they probably couldn't get into Australia, and so they went through to New Zealand, and he's ended up in New Zealand as well. And so, and some people have been joking already that he may still get into Australia, because once he's got New Zealand citizenship sorted, he can walk into through the back door, and you can have him, you can keep him.
Yeah. One of our contributors, Lucas Roses, he wrote an expose on the extremist links of Belarus and some of the far left socialist activists who'd been promoting him. He contributed a lot of articles to the Guardian during his time in detention, which is because the left always call the detention centers like concentration camps. I didn't know that you could send through live blogs
From your phone.
From detention center, and you could WhatsApp a book through, you know, while you're in detention, get published, and then win some sort of prize.
And then you can travel to that country to accept that prize. That's basically the reason he got into New Zealand, was to attend one of these ceremonies for some prize thing, or I can't even remember what it was, and I don't really care. And that, you know, that was sort of the pretense to get him into the country. And the whole thing. I mean, obviously people are angry. I mean, this is a mockery of the refugee system. This is a mockery of people who are genuinely refugees who need some kind of political asylum. You know, and they go from that country where they, you know, into New Zealand. For instance, Colombian refugees have been highlighted recently of, people who and have resettled. Many of them, I believe, in the South Island, in rural areas where they've started to build up a life for themselves. And this is because they were persecuted in their country, and, you know, they are very happy to be here and to contribute. And what has Buchani done? He was given a sort of some kind of research fellow position at Canterbury University. So he gets taxpayer-funded paycheck. And then his first statements after his asylum claim was approved by the outgoing disgraced philandering adultering immigration minister was we need to deal with hate speech in New Zealand, and we need to ban the National Party has terrible hate speech, and so we need to ban hate speech in New Zealand. That this is the guy who they have let into the country, and that's his first mission, is he's going to be blabbing on about hate speech forever. So if we get a change of government, I hope that deportation is on the cards, because this guy needs to get out.
Why don't you just come out and say that Ian Lees-Galloway, he's going to hell? Why don't you just say that?
Okay, well, if he does not repent, he's going to hell. Yes, and good riddance. That this was his final act as a minister, and how absolutely disgraceful.
I was trying to get you to get it all out.
Thank you for helping me stumble over my words.
Give him the wrath.
I'm being restrained. I have heard from some people who are far less restrained, I think especially Talkback Radio today and probably for the next week is going to be incensed, absolutely.
Now, it's been established at Melbourne's Black Lives Matter rallies at the beginning of June, when the first wave had finished and the media needed something else to whip up. Obviously, they were promoting Black Lives Matter 2.0, triggered by the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis over in the United States. Six people who attended the Melbourne Black Lives Matter rallies have tested positive for coronavirus. Two were residents of those public housing towers. Because contact tracing has been so poor, we don't know whether they spread it there or contracted it there or contracted it there and spread it back into those places. These are a lot of unknowns, but despite this, because Sydney is not New South Wales is not in lockdown, they have had cases in the teens for the past week. They're on high alert because it's starting to move north, the Melbourne virus, as some have called it, or the Dan virus. Socialists and Greens in Sydney are planning a Black Lives Matter rally for noon on Tuesday at Sydney's Town Hall. New South Wales Police are currently before the Supreme Court trying to ban it. This is the organiser for it, Paddy Gibson, longtime far-left socialist activist with the Trotsky Alliance Solidarity Network. That's him there. He's been, obviously, promoting the rally in the media and claiming that it's a right for them to hold this rally, even though the Socialists and Greens in Melbourne now, they're not planning any more Black Lives Matter rallies.
I wonder why. They need the rally to spread more coronavirus.
That's the sort of suspicion. Are they trying to deliberately cause a second wave in Sydney lockdown so they can crush the white man's capitalism more?
Yeah, exactly. And don't worry, the media will never mention it, so they're perfectly safe. They can go ahead and hold their rally and they'll never get the blame for it. It's a genius move.
We also have to remember that the real irresponsible people are not the Black Lives Matter rally, but the anti-lockdown pro freedom activists, because they've been really going after them in the past week. A lot I've featured on my show, such as Fanos, Patias, Rafael Fernandez, James Bartolo, and I had Craig Cole on my Wilmsfront show this week. There was a hit piece in The Australian and Daily Mail Australia on Saturday about Rafael and Fanos. Daily Mail called them the sick online virus deniers. And interestingly, a few days later on Tuesday, their 99% Unite group was banned from Facebook. Fanos's Facebook account was disabled. And James Bartolo, who I've interviewed, he runs the Conscious Truth Network. he filmed himself getting through one of the Checkpoint Charlies on the Ring of Steel on Metropolitan Melbourne. One of his followers, Eve Black, she filmed herself going through one of those checkpoints using the basically asserting their rights to the police officer, saying, you know, am I under arrest?
Am I being detained?
Yeah, yeah, that's that sort of thing. And she got through the checkpoint. That has now gone viral now, and she is the most hated person on social media and mainstream media at the moment. She should get a fine, and you know, people like her, they're the scum of our society. And our Victorian Police Minister Lisa Neville said today, you know, we know who she is. It was basically Lisa Neville said, we're going to hunt her down and give her a fine. Eve Black, she's posted subsequently on Facebook. She has no regrets about what she did. The checkpoint that both she, both James and Eve passed, none of us have any idea what checkpoint they were. So there's a lot of context missing from that. It's just that the people have seen them get through the checkpoint by asserting their rights, and of course you know, of course human rights are not cool at the moment. You've got to basically believe the government, do what they say, it's for your own benefit, even though we've just met this show going through their constant failures and how they've contributed to this second
they
wave.
They can never be punished for their failures.
Yeah, but they just see them going through these checkpoints, not answering any other police questions, and just like, how dare you? You're going to spread the virus. And we've seen a few, mask Karens. We have on the first couple of days of the face covering mandate, because a lot of people have said, especially these 99% Unite, Conscious Truth Network, and also Craig Cole's No Consent, just saying we're not wearing a face mask, you can't force us, look at these acts and that, you can't force us to do this. I have heard stories of people who have not been wearing masks in the supermarket or just walking getting yelled and abused at. So I don't know how you're helping to create a positive climate, by, because you don't know their personal circumstance, you don't know why they're not wearing a mask. They might have and even Dan Andrews and Brett Sutton, they said, like, look, don't assume that they're not wearing a mask because they're stubborn or whatever. Like, they might have an underlying health condition.
It's the sort of the snitch culture, and you know, they want to get out of this, and so they're going to lash out at anybody who's not complying with, you know, he's not doing the right thing to get them out of it so that they can go back to normal. And if only if everybody complies can we go back to normal.
Even though we've already gone through how masks are not the silver bullet, they don't keep in all the droplets. They're not a magical. The droplets can still spread. They can lure people into a false sense of security where they don't observe social distancing. Yeah. And as far as I know, none of these anti-lockdown pro-freedom activists have infected anyone or got coronavirus themselves. No. And James Bartolo.
No, because they're not. They don't. They're not crazy, right? And It's not particularly difficult to engage in good hygiene practices without, without ending up in the situation where everyone has to do something that makes no sense, and that, you know, where there's absolutely no scientific. As we said earlier, the reason these were initially not counted, these measures were initially discouraged, even simply because, oh well, they're probably not that effective.
Yeah. And Fenos, Raphael, and James, they're extremely fit and healthy. They exercise, they eat right, and that's going to protect their immune system much better than a face mask. They're going to have a better immune, better at protecting themselves from the coronavirus than, say, some fat person wearing a mask.
Exactly. And obviously, if they are fitter and healthier, they're less likely to infect other people as well. You know, straightforward. So we are well over time. But I'm gonna give you one last item, and then I've got an update myself as well. But I do believe that you have a final update on a previous show around the famous brand of Kuhn cheese that you introduced us to.
I'm not sure how much longer we're allowed to call it Kuhn cheese because it has been announced that it's changing its name, but they haven't found a new name yet. But it won't be it won't be called Kuhn cheese. Edward Kuhn, even though he developed that delicious brand of cheese and that was his name,
has been cancelled.
So I propose to call it cancel cheese. Why not? Since it's part of cancel culture, let's just call it cancel cheese. It's an appropriate name.
And if you've got any other good suggestions for things to name their cheese, you can send it through to Kuhn. They should rename their cheese to. What a weird and wonderful world we live in.
Yeah, apparently during this second wave, you know, we've still got time to, you know, do this stupid stuff.
Oh, absolutely. The stupid stuff is part of the package. It all has to come together.
Just like the mask will contain the coronavirus, cancelling Kuhn cheese will end racism.
Absolutely. Well, we are going to quickly wrap this up, and we are well over time. I've just been reminded by somebody that that I should mention. I've got my my first day in court around the police raid on my home back in January is slated for the 30th next week. So this is this is sort of the first stages of you know, back and forth and discovery and so on. Mm-hmm. So my lawyer has just come out of the actually a big case that we haven't talked about on the show, but it was known as the Wallace case, where the man, well, his last name was obviously Wallace, and I can't remember what his first name was right now, but he was shot by the police 20 years ago, basically, and the case that his family are bringing against the police are that he was deprived of life because they after he had been shot by police, they didn't provide him any medical assistance or anything along those lines. He was basically just left there on the street to bleed out while nobody was allowed to help him, even though his life likely could have been saved. But that case is wrapping up, and that means that we are ready to go. Stephen Wallace was his name, and it's his parents who have taken this case. And we, so we're ready to go, and hopefully that means that we can get some progress on my own case to have this trespass case against the police finally come to at least we can have the start getting the police to front up. And thank you to everyone who has helped me so far, and who will continue to help me. And it means that perhaps for the first time since January next week or the week after, I'll have some kind of update on it. Well, that's positive.
Of course, I will send you my best wishes and good luck. Obviously, I can't be there in person for the obvious reason to you know, cover it and support you. But I'm sure, have you got a few supporters coming?
I've got a few supporters. It's not the case before the judge kind of situation. Is just an early discovery stage still. So once we are at that stage where hopefully we get a ruling, which I don't know how far away that can be. Like I said, this has dragged on for months and months, and obviously coronavirus hasn't helped. But that is, I will let you all know when that happens, but I will provide updates along the way. So.
And just updating everybody on my current and Unshackled Productions broadcast schedule. Obviously, this week you've noticed that the show schedule has become sporadic again. That's due to, obviously, things are a bit hectic with the second Melbourne lockdown. So I had just the weekly Wilms front on Wednesday evening. There was no one Kakabors last night on Thursday. There will only be the weekly version of Wilms front next week, but it will be on a Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the Wilms front YouTube and DLive channel. But Uncuckables will be back at 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time Thursday on the Uncuckables YouTube and DLive. This show will be back 6 p.m. Melbourne time Friday on the Unshackled YouTube channel, and I'll let you know when I know what the next week's show looks like, what the schedule's going to look like, because obviously given how things are at Melbourne at the moment,
given how things are in Melbourne at the moment is the reason why the show's gone 20 minutes overtime, because Tim is desperate to talk to people.
ranting and raving. I'm mad as hell.
Absolutely. I don't blame you. And so we will be back next week at the usual time. In 2 weeks' time, I've got something on the Friday, so that'll be a cancelled show. But other than that, we will continue and let you know when the shows are. And thank you again. You can go to rightminds.nz/donate to support me. Again, I'm probably not going to be doing much writing, but I will be here as many Fridays as I can be. And we're about 7 weeks out from the election. So
yeah, and I'll be looking forward to covering it. And again, I can't come like I did last election, I'll be covering it in full, and we'll have a Trad Tasman talk election night special with some other panelists as well.
We definitely will, and if we can, we can get you some kind of special journalist special pass to come into the country for the election, maybe, Tim. We'll see what we can sort out.
Yeah, that would be an interesting would they allow a journalist such as me. Jacinta would probably be like Justin Trudeau in that regard, how he treats rebel news.
Yeah, exactly. If you got a license for that journalism. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Stay safe and stay free, and good night. We will see you next week.
See you next week. Stay safe, stay free, not just from the virus, but from the government and the media as well.